League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
So what are we starting with this week?
We review.
Dead
nice
wrong.
We review.
Oh, dead wrong. No? We're starting with a little bit of Spotify, because I want to tell you guys about Spotify. You know, you guys have been on Spotify recently, haven't you?
I do have an account.
Okay. Well, if you go on Spotify, you'll find out that we are actually number 42 in the top UK science podcasts.
Ooh.
Isn't that nice? That's great, isn't it? But I think it'd be really cool if we could move up. So why don't we talk about this in a little bit? Maybe in a few weeks and see if we've moved up. We've also got 7,497 followers on Spotify, which is amazing. And I think the next time we talk about this, when we look at the charts again, what we could do is maybe shout out a Spotify follower.
Mm.
So if you follow us on Spotify, screenshot your little follow button saying that you followed us, tweet it to us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, or you can send it in an email, SciGuysPod@gmail.com. Whatever, we'll shout you out on the show. Maybe. Depends how many of you send it. If only one of you, sends it, you'll definitely be shouted out. But if more than
what
one...
a three-hour episode.
If you have a Spotify account, even if you don't use it, go and follow us on Spotify.
Yeah.
That's what we're saying.
Yeah. Just follow us on Spotify, guys.
Great.
Shall we start the show?
Aye.
Let's start the show.
Welcome to the Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutford. And this week's special guest, Guy Larson.
Thank you for having me. This is so exciting.
Well, hello.
Thanks for coming, Guy. We're very excited to have you. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling all right, yeah. Considering the world's burning, I'm feeling all right. Pulse is there, feeling good, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, hopefully you'll enjoy the show as well. And this, wait, when do I do it?
Just go from there.
Do I do it? I'm sorry. Okay, this can stay in, by the way. This week we're talking about the fifth sense.
The what fifth
is,
sense?
What is the fifth? Is it time?
No.
We all have a sense. We all have a sense of time.
That's the one where you can sense dead people, right?
That's the sixth. That's the sixth sense.
Nice. The one before that. Before you can sense that people
taste.
Are dead.
Oh wait, we already
have
five.
You taste them. You taste
sorry,
dead people.
I was like, we have four senses, obviously. What's the fifth one?
It is taste. Yeah, I don't know who said that, but well done, whoever got
that. Me.
Well done.
I can't actually taste. I just have a sense of time.
Wow, this orange times of 6 o'clock. yeah, so we're talking about taste today. It was actually suggested by Ashley, our executive producer over on Patreon.
Hey.
If you want to be an executive producer, you can head to patreon.com/SciGuys and join our Botamic Boatface tier, where you get to just tell us what topic to do, and we'll do it. And that's this.
A very good perk.
It's a very good one. You have incredible control over what we make. So thank you, Ashley, for suggesting this. And today we will be talking about the science of taste. So why don't we dive into it?
I want to know why Guy's here.
Why is
there's always a reason there's a guest, or is he just nice? Is that why?
I just like Guy.
Okay.
Yeah, no real qualifications at all.
Over a year ago, PhD in taste.
So, over a year ago, I said to Guy, you should come on the podcast. Or Guy said, oh, I'd love to. And then he just didn't because the world ended. So I thought, why not do it this year?
Yeah, I actually called my bluff. I can't believe it. I'm actually here. The thing is, I'm not a very scientific person. Like I make like films and I draw. The only thing that's scientific is that I used to edit for a channel called VSource back in the day. Way back when. So that's the only kind of scientific bone I have in my body. So all of my science knowledge is from within like a 2 to 3 year period where I worked for that channel.
Guy, out of interest, what's your favorite musician?
My favorite musician?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a big fan of Franz Ferdinand, like indie pop from 2003.
All right. So we could say that you've got quite good taste then.
Yes.
There you go. That's why you're here. You've got good taste. We're talking
not
about
so much fashion taste, but I'll take the music one.
Shall we dive into what taste is by the taste is then?
What is taste? Because I'm really unfamiliar because I only have four senses.
How does taste work? Before I tell you how taste works, I do want to ask, this all is already gone off the rails. And Guy, I know you've not had any part in this going off the rails, but I feel like your presence has caused
this.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Quite an intimidating force, as you can see.
Yeah.
So before I tell you how taste works, can you name the five tastes that your taste buds can detect?
Umami.
My mummy what?
I'm sorry.
Luke. Umami.
Luke, stop talking about my mother, please. If anyone else has an actual guess, please
umami.
Give it. Luke, stop
umami.
Being...
Umami.
Stop saying umami.
That is the answer. That's one of the answers.
I'm Luke, so confused.
Is that the beef one? Is that the one that lets you taste like beef-flavoured crisps and things?
Yeah, so that's the savoury one. It was the most recently discovered by... Western
by
science.
The Western
by the Western world. Yeah.
This is like when men discovered the clitoris.
Yeah. You know, in Japan, they knew about it for a while. And then, you know, in the West, we decided, oh, I guess we'll translate that paper from Japanese and discover it. We discovered it. Seriously. So umami was known about. It's the sort of savory one. It's MSG.
Wasabi.
Yeah. Wasabi is, I'm not sure if that's umami. But,
it is.
Well, fantastic. MSG is umami. You get that from, you can get it from a seaweed, a specific kind of seaweed. But a Japanese scientist, Kikune Ikeda, discovered it.
Sorry, I'm wrong.
You're
wrong? Wasabi is not umami.
I was going to say. So Kikune Ikeda discovered it in 1910, supposedly. He wrote a paper on it, and it wasn't translated from Japanese until 2002. So for almost 100 years, the West was just like, I guess we'll get around to translating that at some point, I guess.
Wow.
Put it on the bottom of our list.
So that's why if you ask people, they'll think of umami as being a sort of new flavor, a new taste, because we just didn't get around to it until 2002.
Literally never heard of it before you just mentioned it.
Really?
I would have just said savory.
Yeah, it's savory. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what are the other four apart from umami?
Sweet.
Yes.
Sour.
Salty.
Sour. Salty.
Bitter.
Yeah, that's it.
Yay! We did it.
Full house.
Good job.
Good teamwork. Yeah.
So sweet, that comes from sugars usually. Sugars are sweet. So fruits are sweet because they've got lots of sugars in them. Mm-hmm. That's generally what sweet is. You've got salty as well. What tastes salty?
Salt
tastes salty. Yeah, the salt does taste salty. So sodium chloride, but other mineral salts can taste salty too, like potassium or magnesium salts. And sour is mostly acidic foods. So basically things that have got hydrogen ions in water. So acids would be sort of citric acid, which is in citrus fruits.
Lemons. Limes.
Oranges, ooh, limes. Yeah. Yeah, things like that. Bitter comes from lots of different types of things. There are about 35 proteins in your sensory cells that can respond to bitter chemicals. And lots of plants can taste bitter, particularly poisonous ones.
Ooh.
So bitter, I think, is bitter can be a much broader taste, apparently. And yeah, a lot of it can come from plants that... are bad for you, basically.
So right. Is every taste just a mix-up of all of the five different tastes, or is it like differing degrees of it? Am I ruining the show again? No.
You've done
I
it again.
It was a valid question.
No, it's a very good question. It's a very good question that I was going to answer in like 5-10 minutes. No. look, so I think it's probably easier to explain how we taste, like sort of how tastes develop or how tastes are built up out of those five, after describing exactly how taste works, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, do you guys have any idea which parts of the tongue taste what?
Oh, I learnt it once and then forgot it. I saw a diagram.
You saw a diagram?
And I was like, this makes perfect sense.
Does it?
And then I forgot it.
Really?
Because it's just not useful.
It's not useful.
Is it a trick question because actually the whole of the tongue tastes all the stuff?
Well
really?
Done, Luke.
Yes.
I had a discussion with Luke. I had a discussion with Luke about this a couple of weeks ago.
Did you?
Yeah.
I literally just thought of that. I don't. Maybe it went in subconsciously. I don't remember even talking about that with you.
Wait, why did I then in like ninth grade see a diagram of a tongue being like, this is where sweet is, and this
I
is
had
where
that as well.
Is.
Yeah, no, no.
Yeah.
I also had that.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Do you know how netball is a game that was made because someone misinterpreted the rules of basketball? Are you aware of that?
I was not, but it does make sense.
So what I heard was apparently someone was sent all the rules for basketball. A PE teacher was sent the rules for basketball along with suggestions on where to place players. And the person took that as the players have to stay in these quadrants, which is why in netball, some players are only allowed to stay in particular parts.
Yeah.
I did wonder how you could confuse basketball, because you'd watch them running about and you'd go,
yeah.
Well, they have to stand still.
Yeah, once they get the ball, they have to not move.
Yeah. Yeah, but in netball, I think they're not allowed to leave certain areas if they're certain players. I've never played netball because I wasn't a girl in school.
Hey, so I played netball at school. I was really? On the school team. Yeah.
Really?
You're the school team.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, I was wing attack. I was very good.
I think
they definitely wouldn't have
let
boys on the school team at my school, but I did play it.
Honestly, I've never known a school to have boys play netball.
I was the only boy.
Oh, okay.
Oh, legend. That's so cool.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
it's
no,
not
it's
cool by the standards that you would have been judged upon in school, but by now standards, it's really cool.
Didn't think that would come up.
Okay, well, this sort of tongue map is a similar thing, wherein I think it was a tongue map was sort of misunderstood as being, these are the tastes that can only be tasted by this part of the tongue. Seriously, for anyone listening, definitely look into that netball, that netball basketball thing, because it's ridiculous. But no, essentially, people misunderstood the tongue map thing. All parts of your tongue can taste all tastes, and pretty much as a whole, the sides are more sensitive than the middle of your tongue. And the back of the tongue is slightly more sensitive to bitter tastes than other areas of the tongue. And that's probably because you don't want to swallow something that's poisonous. Mm. And poisonous things tend to be bitter. So if it's at the back of the tongue, it's sort of a last line of defense of like, oh no, that bitter thing is going down into my throat.
Don't eat that.
Don't eat it.
Like a gag.
Yeah, like a gag. Mm. What a funny little joke that is. So yeah, that's that misconception absolutely demolished. Certain parts of the tongue are not responsible for specific tastes. You can taste everything everywhere.
I've officially learned something today. Thank you.
Fantastic. We did it. That's one down, two more to go. Once you guys learn something, we'll be sorted. So how do we actually taste? So it's pretty straightforward. It's pretty much exactly how you'd think. There are chemicals in your food, and those get into your mouth when you put them in there to eat. And it's almost dissolved in your saliva and is freed from whatever it's in. And then it comes into contact with a nerve cell, sort of tasting cell. And then the cell changes specific proteins in the wall of the cell. Mm. And those kind of correspond to whatever's coming into contact. You guys following?
Yeah.
You're right, Corey. That is exactly what I would have thought it would be.
No,
to be expected.
When I said exactly what you think it would be, I mean putting something in your mouth and it dissolving. The rest of it, I don't know. I don't know what you think. What did you think?
It is strange though, isn't it? Because it's like you're putting something in your mouth, but actually it's only your body reacting to it, and it's not actually the food itself that is causing a taste. So in theory, you could taste anything you wanted.
Yeah.
It's just it needs to be triggered.
Wow. Tastes are made up. Because tastes are just specific sort of chemicals reacting with basically parts of your body, your tongue, really. Mm. You can have sort of tastes that don't correspond to what your body expects to have. That's like artificial sweeteners. So sweet stuff tastes sweet because it's generally chemically pretty similar. Mm. So your body knows, I'm getting sugar. Better get ready for that sugar. But if you give it, say, artificial sweetener, it's like, oh boy, here comes the sugar. But then it doesn't get sugar. So you could trick your body in lots of different ways. But yeah, so something
I have
basic.
A question.
Yes, Luke, ask your
Sorry.
Question.
Okay, really specific question. So you know how when you eat some sugar, it causes a reaction? Is it the release of insulin?
Yes.
In order to metabolize that sugar. Does the tasting or whatever happens to sugar when you eat it, I don't know. Does the tasting of the sugar trigger that reaction, or does it happen when the sugar hits the bloodstream? Is the taste bud triggering that reaction?
I think an increase. Okay, this is off the top of my head, so it's not necessarily 100% correct. And if it's not correct, then there will be something down in the comments a better description of it. We'll pin that. Mm. But
basically, he's guessing.
No, well, I'm not guessing.
That's
I'm trying,
way of saying it,
I'm trying to remember.
There's a lot of that, isn't there?
Oh, sugar in your blood, like increased sort of sugar in your bloodstream, will increase the production of insulin. But I think your body gets ready to produce insulin when you taste something sweet, because it knows that something sweet is about to hit your bloodstream.
So that means that it would trigger that release when you eat an artificial sweetener that actually isn't actually, that's not a correct response, but your body doesn't know that.
Yeah, so I have read that apparently artificial sweeteners can be unhealthy for you, because your body then, they can make you hungrier because you're expecting energy when you don't really get it. And it can mess your body up a little bit in its response to sugar. So I have read that. So that is a potential outcome. Very good question, Luke.
I also have a question.
Yes, guys.
When I'm about to like eat something that I know is really sour, why does my tongue go like crazy? Like it's expecting. Or should I see a doctor about it?
Depends how crazy you mean. But no, I think. Okay, put it this way: with a lot of things, your brain knows what's coming, and your brain controls your sort of reaction to a lot of things. And when it comes to sort of your senses, a lot of that is built up by your brain. We'll get into it in a little bit why taste and flavor are different things and how your brain plays a role in that. But your brain is very good at anticipating things, and so if you think something is about to come, your brain will basically get ready for it happening. So if you know something's going to be sour, your brain's probably like, oh boy, sour. I'm thinking sour. And your body reacts as though there's something sour. In the same way that, you know, sort of, if you think you're about to be hit, you'll flinch. People will say, ow, as though they've been hurt when they haven't actually been hurt. Things like that.
Now that makes sense in terms of like your mouth producing lots of saliva, for example. Mm-hmm. But what does Guy mean by my tongue goes crazy? Because even when I put something sour in my mouth, my tongue doesn't then go crazy. Does it like retract and get scared of the sour thing?
Yeah, like it flinches,
like it's about to be attacked.
What does it do, Guy?
It just splits in two. Let's get away from me. Don't want it near me.
I'm really glad we've got Guy on this episode with his crazy tongue.
Yeah, but I feel like I'm going to get to the end of this episode and I'm still not going to know what Guy's tongue does in response to sour things.
Okay, Guy, I'm sorry. You're going to have to tell us exactly what your tongue does.
Well, I mean, the serious answer is that like it kind of like, I don't know, it doesn't fizz, but like, you know, when you're about to eat something sour and then your tongue's like, there's no way to describe it. It just tastes sour. Like
it's as though you're already tasting sour.
Yeah, it kind of is. It's kind of like anticipating that that's on its way.
Yeah.
So it's going, what if it could speak, which it can.
It literally does. That's most of what it's for.
That's two things. That's one of them.
So, it's probably your brain anticipating it. Mm. And it could be sort of crossed wires and your tongue reacting to something that hasn't actually happened yet.
Speaking of sour things, Rebecca asked me the other day, when you taste something sour, you like shrivel up your face and you're like, why? Why is what's that achieving?
You know, I don't know. I actually don't know.
That's a really good question.
That's a really good question. You know what? We'll find that out. I'll find that out and I'll put it in. I'll tag it in the comments below.
Can I take a stab at an answer?
Yeah, go for it.
So is it to do with the nerves that are around the face and is it to do with like the trigeminal nerve and all the stuff that's inside your face that kind of interacts, that makes up flavor later?
Probably, yeah, that's probably it.
And it's probably like pain, which makes your face go, like it makes my tongue go.
Kind of energy.
Yeah. You know what? That's a pretty solid answer. Let's go with that for now.
Again, it's a guess.
I'm glad we've got a guy.
Kudos if you get it right.
So... I don't even know what we were talking about, but let's get back to actually how we taste. So we know that you put something in your mouth, it kind of gets dissolved in your saliva and it comes into contact with a nerve cell, and that nerve cell changes specific proteins in its wall, in the wall of a sensory cell. And that then makes the sensory cell transmit messengers, which activate other nerve cells. Just to simplify this, basically, something gets into your mouth, proteins change on the surface of cells, and a message is sent, which basically says, these proteins have changed in this way, which means it's probably sweet, you know?
Mm.
So a sweet thing changes proteins in a certain way. A sour thing will activate different proteins and it'll send a different message. That's basically what it is.
I see.
Yeah?
Mm.
And yeah, there are lots of... You guys have looked at your tongue before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah? That wasn't a trick question. Have you?
I was waiting for someone else to say it first.
You ever sat in the mirror and looked at your tongue? If you look at your tongue, you'll probably notice that it's covered in bumps. Lots of little bumps. Yeah?
Yep.
Mm. Bumpy boy.
Those are called papillae or papillae. And they basically have got lots and lots of sensory cells on them. And you've got different sort of amounts of bumps at different places that you'll probably notice at the back of your tongue. There are quite a lot of bumps. And they're kind of like, they look kind of like warts. They look kind of like warts. Mm. And the good thing about them is that they increase the surface area. And if you did science in high school, you know that increasing the surface area means you can, basically touch more stuff, essentially. So more surface area is good. And there are basically three different types, which are divided up by their shape. Fungiform ones, which I presume look like mushrooms. You've got about, they're the most common. You've got between 200 to 400 all over the surface of the tongue. You can see them mostly at the tip of the tongue and at the edges. And that will be why the tip and the edges are really sensitive to taste. Mm. Let's just get that good shot of Luke touching his tongue there. and these ones not only have... sensory cells for taste, they can also sense touch and temperature, which is why you can really feel, you know, the tip of your tongue if you push it against your teeth.
Oh, yeah.
And each papilla contains 3 to 5 taste buds. We'll get into what taste buds are in a second. And then you've got circumvallate papillae. And they're really big. They're found at the base of your tongue where your throat starts. You've only got about 7 to 12 of those.
Oh,
but they've got several thousand taste buds, so lots more taste buds than the other type, but there are far fewer of these papillae.
Right.
Yeah.
So the actual bumps themselves aren't technically the taste buds.
No, they're not.
Because I always thought they were the taste buds.
Everyone always thinks
that. But they contain taste buds.
They have taste buds in them. Yeah, taste buds are much smaller than you think.
Interesting.
And there you can see them. You can see them with your eye. They're like in a V shape at the back of your tongue. Mm. And then you've got the foliate papillae. You can see those with your eye as well on the back of your tongue, on sort of back edges of your tongue. Mm. They're sort of like several folds that are quite close together. You've got about 20 of those and they've got about a few hundred taste buds each.
Wow.
But I hear you asking, what are taste buds?
What are taste buds?
What are taste buds? We say that our tongue is our taste organ. You know, in the same way that we say our eyes are our sort of sight organ, but actually the taste buds are the taste organ, really.
Ah.
They've got lots of sort of taste cells in them, sort of sensory cells that are connected to a lot of nerve fibers. So each taste bud has between 10 and 50 sensory cells. And they're kind of like the cells kind of form a capsule. It's kind of like a flower bud, if you know what I'm looking like that kind of shape. And there are kind of like little extensions of these sensory cells, which are called taste hairs. So basically inside, on top, on these sort of these bumps all over your tongue, you've got taste buds, which are kind of like little caverns with taste hairs in them, essentially.
The hairs?
They're not hairs. They're like thin extensions. We just call them taste hairs.
Oh.
Because they're thin and long.
Yep. Long and pointy.
So as I said, you put something in your mouth, it comes into contact with your taste cells, it changes what's on the surface of those sort of sensory cells, and then that gets a signal sent to your brain saying, I have tasted this. Very straightforward, really. There are different levels of sensitivity to the 5 basic tastes, and each cell has a specific sort of ranking of which ones it tastes more. So one cell might be more sensitive to sweets, and then sort of salty, sour, bitter, umami, while another cell could have a completely different ranking. And that means that you can see how things taste different. It's not just, oh, this is sweet. It's like, oh, this tastes more sweet than something else. You get me? Because there are different rankings. Lots of different cells have different rankings, so you can have different sensitivities to different tastes. So let's say something wasn't very sweet. It would maybe trip the cells that are incredibly sensitive to sweet taste, yeah, but not necessarily trip the ones that aren't very sensitive.
The more stubborn ones. Yeah. They're like, not sweet enough for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So then you would then interpret that as being sort of less sweet than something that hit all of your sweet sensors.
Does that mean that some people can taste sweet things more than others?
Or yeah, is so, that well, there are super tasters who have more taste buds and can have a sort of more intense taste of other things.
But super tasters?
Yeah, super tasters.
Like, wow. Gene Simmons from Kiss, right? With the super long tongue.
Yes. I feel like, honestly, though, I feel like that's a reference that a lot of people listening will not... I don't know how old our audience is. Is Kiss a modern reference?
I don't know how old Kiss are now.
I mean, it's kind of too old for me, and it says something about me. It's
too old for me.
No, it's too old for all of us, surely. But like, okay, for anyone listening who doesn't know who Kiss are, Kiss are a band that has a Pokemon based after them. There you go. Look that one up.
I did not know that.
They've got a Pokemon. Corey,
you're setting us a lot of homework today. Go and research the origins of netball, and then...
It's all fun stuff. You'll enjoy looking up the origins of netball, and you'll enjoy knowing that, what is it? Obstagoon is based off Gene Simmons.
Oh, it is.
That's
there
crazy.
Is.
Look at that.
Yeah, 100%. Wow. Came out like 2 years ago. So if you assume that there are five basic tastes and 10 different levels of taste intensity, you can have sort of 100,000 apparently different different levels or different sort of tastes with just your tongue.
Right. So it is just five different dimensions of taste.
No.
Yeah, well, like five dimensions, not 5 points, but like intensity in five dimensions.
No. So
oh, okay.
No, so the thing is that there is taste, okay? And there is flavor. Mm. Do you guys know what the difference between taste and flavor is?
No.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So I've never thought about it like that.
Taste is just what happens with your tongue, but flavor involves a lot of different things, namely smell. Smell is really, really important in flavor. And there's also temperature, the sort of texture of something, how it feels in general. Mm. All of those different things combine to make flavor. But taste is just the combination of those five basic tastes. And what's really interesting about flavor is that smelling something, so the smell of something and its flavor can be different, not necessarily because it smells different, it's because it's in your mouth and it comes up sort of through the back of your mouth, and you smell it that way, along with sort of the combined with the tastes, those sort of perceptions, those sort of signals come together in the brain to make taste effectively.
Right.
Which if you think of it kind of like how you've got different cells in your eyes for seeing color and for sort of seeing intensity of light. Mm. Those come together to just make sight, while smell and taste sort of come together along with the sort of temperature and all of those other things to make just flavor, your sort of flavor perception. Which
that,
is
isn't
really
that
cool.
Why they recommend that if you have to take a medicine that tastes awful, you just have to block your nose and then drink it.
Yeah,
and then it's like pretty fine.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how well that will necessarily work because
probably not with everything.
You know, from what I've heard, from what I've read, rather, you can smell it from sort of the back of your throat coming up that way, supposedly.
So that's not around the back. Well. Yeah, never thought of it that way.
Yes,
yeah, you guard in the front door and they just sneak around via the back door.
My can't candles always taste best when I shove them to the back of my throat.
Just don't talk about it on the podcast, this. Man. Whatever you do in the comfort of your own home, the privacy of your own room is fine.
When you smell them from the back of your throat.
Are they still lit?
Oh, yeah, obviously.
You got to have that temperature. They don't have any scent, the temperature otherwise. Changes the taste, Luke. Come on.
Oh, sorry, I'm not paying attention.
Yeah, people often confuse taste with flavor. But yeah, it's the sort of combined thing of the two of them, as I've said. And yeah, there's lots of different things that come into it as well, like color. For instance, as well. So color can influence how you sort of perceive the taste of things. So that kind of comes into probably with sort of fruits and vegetables, let's say, whether they're ripe or not. Mm. That can affect your perceived taste. But they've also done studies, and color genuinely just can affect how things taste to people. Things can taste better if they're one color or worse if they're another color, despite the fact that the actual taste of something hasn't changed.
Yes.
Yeah. people are very easy to trick, aren't they?
Yeah.
Does that mean certain, is it just that they're like a single color, or is that it's multicolored, or is it if it's red? Like, are there certain colors that typically taste better than others?
I think it depends. I think it genuinely depends on, it depends on what the food is. So it can depend on like what the branding of the food. But if you think about it, the colors that you normally see in foods are more likely to be to taste better. So a sort of blue apple would probably be off-putting to you because if you think about it, this is something that I was told in school, and it baffled me. What is the sort of least common color for food, for sort of natural food like fruit and veg and meat?
Blue.
Yeah, ultraviolet. Radioactive.
I always ate my ultraviolets.
Yeah,
I never miss them.
Well, how would we know though? Because ultraviolet could be super common. We just don't know. We don't know because we can't see it. No, but you're right though, Tim. It is blue. Even blueberries aren't really blue.
They're like dark purple, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And if you skin them, they're green.
Okay, I didn't know that.
But if you brush your teeth after eating them, they do. It comes out blue in the toothpaste.
Really?
Yeah, it's really weird.
Wait, why?
It's like. Well, look, we're going into my day-to-day activities at this point, but like if I have like my blueberries and my granola and then I need to brush my teeth and go, it tastes awful, but like I'm spitting out in the sink and it is blue, and it's like, aha, finally, now I know why. Now I know how you got your name.
That's why they were called blueberries.
I'm loving this.
I'm loving this insight into Guy's life that we're getting, you know, all the way from your netball playing days to your...
Oh, I need to run to netball. Brush my teeth.
Ah, blueberries. But that's why they're called blueberries.
Welcome to my vlog, guys. Today I'm going to be going off and playing netball. But first, why are blueberries blue? I'll tell you after I brush my teeth.
We were saying that the color changes the perception of the taste.
Oh, yeah. So color changes the perception of taste. No, color changes the perception of flavor.
Sorry.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it just shows you that there are a lot of things that go into sensing flavor. Even sort of, and there's something else as well. You guys are probably, we're talking about brushing teeth, but you guys know that mint tastes cold, right? The same way that chili tastes hot.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know why that is?
No.
No? You want to?
Is there an endothermic and an exothermic reaction in your mouth?
No, literally no. The hot and cold... It's not actually hot or cold. It's just it basically just kind of stimulates ion channels in nerve fibers on your tongue and in your mouth, which basically makes your body think, oh, that's hot, or oh, that's cold.
Just as I suspect.
Basically what Luke said, right?
Exactly. Well, so basically...
Try to help you out here, man.
So basically, here's what we got. Instead of it being actually... hot or cold. Your mouth isn't changing temperature. If you stick a thermometer in there, it's going to be the same temperature. Mm-hmm. But what's actually happening is that the capsaicin in chilies, that's what makes them spicy, hot. And the sort of menthol in mint, it's actually interacting with nerves in your mouth and tricking your body into thinking that it's hot when it's not, or it's cold when it's not.
Wow. So your brain actually does receive signals going, it is warm in my mouth.
Yeah.
And then produces the subjective experience of heat. But it, wow. So your brain does actually think it's hot.
Yeah, your brain thinks it's hot. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Silly brain.
I mean, interesting.
In the same way, if you were to sort of stimulate, a part of your brain, stimulate a part of your brain that is involved with feeling being touched on your hand like this, mm-hmm. right? You could stimulate that part of your brain without touching your hand, and your brain would be like, bro, your hand is being touched right now, mm-hmm. and I'm 100% sure because I can feel it. Basically, it's like, you're just sort of sending a message to your brain saying, oh, my mouth is hot, when actually your mouth is a perfect temperature.
My brain needs to stop lying to me.
Well, you need to stop lying to your brain with chemicals. Yeah. So that's why things taste hot, taste spicy and taste cold. And there's also fatty. So because things need to be dissolved in basically water to taste them, apparently fatty tastes sort of come in between that by a sort of taste of fat. You guys know what fat tastes like.
Not really.
Yes. I couldn't describe it to you.
It's difficult, isn't it? So apparently that comes from sort of the texture of fat and the sort of smells of fat. And apparently there is some research going on. Apparently it could also come from a taste of fat. There might be a sixth taste of fat. But then I've read both sides of this, where some people are saying there are five tastes and other people are saying there are many more than five tastes. But again, I think this is one of those things where we do this thing where we categorize things.
Mm-hmm.
But actually a lot of it is subjective when it comes to taste as well. So there, I don't know. It could be either. We could taste fat. We could only get the flavor of fat based on a combination of factors. But we just don't know yet, necessarily.
Yeah.
Yeah. But how and why did taste evolve? Do you guys know?
For detecting poisonous things that we need to not eat.
Yeah, that's one reason. Taste is good for knowing if something tastes bad, you probably shouldn't eat it.
Yeah. Like you mentioned how some poisonous plants are bitter.
Yeah.
We needed to be able to detect that.
Yeah.
And go, no.
But then also sometimes plants taste in a certain way to deter sort of predators of those plants.
True.
And then humans cultivate them and put them into food and make it a big whole thing about eating those plants. Capsaicin in chilies is a defense mechanism. And we're just like, ha, plant tastes hot.
Joke's on you. Yeah, I really like it.
I like this.
Is it also because, like, if we didn't enjoy eating food, we'd overthink how weird it is that we're putting stuff into our bodies that, and then just not knowing really where it goes?
Yeah,
well, I mean, it goes down somewhere, right? But like, you can't see it.
Well, I think we know. Well, there's always something coming out. I feel like I think we know where it's going.
But you know what I mean? That, like, no, if you didn't enjoy it, like, you'd be like, oh, this is really weird. Why are we eating these nuts, guys? Like, we probably shouldn't. I don't know. Like,
I think that animals are dumb.
Yes.
Like, in the strictest sense, animals are dumb. And I mean animals, including humans, are dumb in that our bodies need to give us rewards in order for us to continue being alive.
Right.
So basically all of the things that we need to do to stay alive or to continue the species feel good. So eating sugar, which gives you energy to survive, it feels good because it tastes good. You know, producing offspring feels good. It makes you want to do more of that. So effectively, if you look at a sort of very simple level, things that feel good generally are good at good for sort of the survival of the species. And things that are bad, like sort of taste bad or smell bad or feel bad, are generally bad for the sort of survival of the species. Yeah,
but that doesn't answer, like, for example, why we have such a specific, like, that would make sense for, like, taste good, taste bad, and what level of good or bad it is. But we have such a high resolution taste sense, and like, pure survival and incentive doesn't necessarily explain that.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, we've got, it is a very complicated thing. So how do I put it? What I'm trying to say is that there are, when you look at your sort of sense of taste and sense of smell, I really like looking at it in the sense as though someone was writing a sci-fi story and they were creating aliens. Now, if you're going to give these aliens like incredible powers, this is going somewhere, trust me. You're going to give these aliens incredible powers. What you would do is give them the power to sense chemicals in the air. And also, before ingesting anything into their body, they have this incredible sense to detect what chemicals are present in that thing. So that's basically what's going on with humans. It's not just like, we're not just tasting, it's not just sort of simple tasting things. It's literally detecting what chemicals are present in what we're putting in our body. Mm-hmm. So the reason that it's so sort of fine-tuned is because there are lots of bloody chemicals out there.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's kind of, we've kind of got it down to these sort of five distinct things is pretty cool, I think, because even if you look at bitter, it's very broad. The things that taste bitter are generally sort of plants that are bad for you. Usually, like, a lot of like poisonous plants will taste bitter. So I think the reason there's such a high resolution of taste is because if you build it up over time, if you're eating a varied diet like humans do, you're going to be exposed to lots and lots of different chemicals that taste lots and lots of different ways. And so it is beneficial to have a reaction, a reaction to all of those different tastes.
Like coriander tastes like soap.
Well, kind of, yeah. So I've actually got a thing on that. Coriander tastes like soap because of, to some people, because of a specific gene. Do you guys know about, does coriander taste nice to any of you?
I love coriander.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. I actually, I don't think I'm part of that club.
No. I think you would know because apparently it tastes like, Luke, it happens to you, right?
It's like kind of happens to me, but it really happens to Rebecca. Like she like wants to be sick when she tastes really? Coriander.
Which is
like when I'm reading out, like we're deciding what to buy and I'm reading out a recipe and I'm like, coriander? And she's like, no! And she's like really angry at the suggestion that there might be coriander in there.
what's your US audience like? Like they would know it's cilantro, right?
Cilantro, yeah. I was about to drop that one in. So it's it comes from the coriandrum sativum plant. It's called cilantro in the US, coriander here. Wow, this is so different.
I always forget the wacky names over there.
Yeah, right?
Cilantro.
You know, they say oregano, oregano.
Oregano? Frisavocado.
Frisavocado. What's it? What do they call rocket something weird as well? Arugula.
That's it.
Messed up.
I didn't know that one.
Yeah. Well, when you live with one, you learn all of their lingo.
When you live with one.
It's trying to communicate with us.
No, so coriander. It tastes good to some people, and to other people it tastes like soap. And I think this is really difficult for people to really conceptualize if it doesn't taste like that to you. It doesn't taste like that to me. I love the taste of it. But yeah, Rebecca's strong reaction. Imagine if the like, you know, someone was like, "Oh, why don't we just put soap in this?" Or why don't we just for a lovely sauce, right? Why don't we just put a nice spritz of this body wash, my nice shower gel in here?
Yeah, that's like, literally what it's like.
Needs more Carex. More Carex. That's it.
Exactly. This wonderful curry is ruined by the shower gel that you just squirted on top. What is going on with that, man? but the reason that is we did some studies on it, and so there are sort of cluster of genes on chromosome 11, and specifically we found a gene, I think it's OR6A2, that is responsible. It contributes to the sort of detection of the sort of soapy smell from cilantro. So if you've got that gene, it can smell kind of soapy and therefore taste a little bit soapy to you. But if you don't have that gene, it doesn't really taste like soap. It just tastes like coriander. It tastes good. Tastes nice. A little bit spicy. Like mwah.
Perfect.
Perfect little topping. And it is really strange because it kind of gets into the idea that there are lots of different ways for us to like and dislike certain tastes. And that is one thing that Ashley had asked about, why we like and dislike certain tastes. And apparently, up until so there is a genetic component to it, obviously.
Yeah.
But there is also a lot of sort of a learned component as well. So, for example, up until the age of 2, apparently, according to a psychologist from Arizona State University, Elizabeth Phillips, you'll eat pretty much anything. You can give a 2-year-old like pretty much anything, and they'll generally eat it.
Yeah.
But after that, you stop necessarily enjoy eating new food.
Yeah.
So you'll be more sort of wary, which is why when someone's a baby, when you've got a baby, you should be feeding them lots of different foods to expose them to it. So that when you give it to them later, they're not like, this is new and I don't like it.
This is foreign. I don't like this.
Yeah, exactly.
This is unknown.
Yeah. So I feel like, I think you'd probably find if you did a study on fussy kids, they probably weren't given a wide range of things when they were, when they were first being exposed to foods.
I was a very fussy kid. My mum said she gave me loads of stuff. And then when I became vegan, I suddenly liked everything.
I was exactly the same.
Really?
I was such a fussy eater growing up.
My mum's friend, Claire, I used to have this saying where like she literally, anything she'd make, spend like half an hour making a nice meal for us and my friends. And then I just go, I don't like it, Claire. And then and she'd have to make me something boring and like that I would eat. And then I turned vegan and was forced to try all these things. And I went, wow, this is great. Hummus is lovely. Wow.
Well, that is interesting because there is this thing wherein basically when you eat something, there are lots of different things that have happened to your body. You know, you're that like we've spoken about this already, the sugar in your blood changes. And there's lots of different things happening in your body, like different hormones being produced and all of that. And so if you experience something new and you've got a sort of positive effect after you eat it, then you'll, when you taste that thing again, your brain will be like, this tasted good. I felt real good after that. So this tastes lovely. Whereas the opposite is also true. If you eat something and you feel bad after it, you could end up not liking that thing. Like, so, you know,
if I fed you a pizza and I punched you in the face afterwards, would you stop not liking pizza?
Look, I think I'd probably stop liking you.
Speaking of, I once went off pizza because I had some. I had some pepperoni pizza once when I was like 12. Mm. Got sick the very next day. And for years later, I was like, pizza?
I still have that. Yeah, I can't eat watermelon for that exact reason. And I think grapefruit juice. Like, there's really weird things.
Yeah.
Because I was sick not long afterwards. And oysters, but that is because it was responsible. Like, the oysters definitely got it.
Something like 30% of the time when you eat oysters, you'll get sick. Mm. Which just...
That's disgustingly high. That's way too high.
It's too
high,
like, right?
It's why a point would you... where like eating them is arrogant. Like, I'm a high roller. I can take it.
It's like 60%. You've got a 60% chance of being fine. Whereas every other food you eat, you've got basically 100% chance of being totally fine after it.
Yeah.
Why?
That percentage goes up if you grew up in Southend-on-Sea and you went to a fish restaurant that had a papyrus font on the front door. Why did
Red
I do
flag
it?
Guy.
That
Come
must
on.
Have got up to like the high 70s at least.
Honestly, it's absolutely ridiculous. I don't understand why people still eat oysters. I mean, just
stored in the Thames, them. That was.
Totally never. Pointless. Totally never. Pointless. But if you've got a bad experience, if you feel bad after eating something, you feel nauseous. That's basically your body. If you think about this in an evolutionary sense, if you find some berries and you're like, wow, berries, you eat the berries and then you feel sick, your body's like, it's probably the berries that made you sick. So I'm gonna make sure that you don't like the taste of those berries so that if you taste them again, you'll spit them out, you know, and then you don't feel sick. And so you're more likely to survive. And that's kind of where that comes from. And then that when you've got people who can taste a lot of things and we've got an abundance of food and generally we're not eating things that are poisonous because, you know, we don't need to go foraging or whatever. That can kind of, you basically can see how that turns into, I don't like the taste of mushrooms because whatever, I didn't like how they made me feel.
Yeah.
So a lot of taste can come from that. There is a genetic component in that some things can genuinely taste differently to you based on how the signals are sent to your brain. But your sort of enjoyment of certain tastes can change depending on what you're exposed to. For example,
interesting.
American chocolate to a lot of British people tastes like vomit.
Oh, I have heard this.
Yeah.
It's not got as much sugar in it.
I think it's got less sugar in it, but there's also, I think, a chemical in it that genuinely, I don't know if you actually find it in vomit, but it tastes like like vomit, or it smells like vomit.
I've tasted that. It's awful.
Yeah. So, no, genuinely, and it sounds disgusting, but so people tend to not like American chocolate because it can taste too much like vomit, but Americans love it because that's what they're exposed to, you know?
Vomit.
And if you think about it, Coca-Cola kind of tastes... It looks bad and it doesn't, it can kind of taste awful sometimes if you're not feeling it.
Yeah.
But it tastes good because you've got all this good associated with it.
And I have nothing good associated with Coca-Cola, so I don't like it at all. Yeah. It just tastes so disappointing to me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's like if you found out that you turned on an Apple computer and it didn't actually work. That's what Coca-Cola being a billion-dollar company is like for me. I'm like, what? Why is anyone so weird?
I feel like drinking Coke is like turning on an Apple computer and it's running Windows. And you're like, okay, I guess this is fine. I mean, I'd rather...
Miscellaneous carbonated vegetable water. Yeah. And that's like, tell me which vegetables are in Coke. You're like, well, there used to be cocaine.
Yeah, so that's kind of how taste develops for different people.
Yeah.
Basically, you're exposed to a taste and either you feel good or bad. And that kind of sticks with you. And it can change over your life as well. You know, things that taste bad can start tasting good. Mm-hmm. There are things that can taste really bad in large amounts, like blue cheese, but taste really good in small amounts. And there are things that you can have to, you know, you can need to get more used to. Like beer. When you're younger, beer doesn't necessarily taste good.
I'm a coffee.
Yeah.
I remember taking my first sip of coffee at 10 and I was like,
How does anyone drink this?
Yeah.
I'm addicted to it now. I love it.
Well, coffee is ridiculously addictive. Like caffeine addiction. Yeah. I've known people with caffeine addictions whose doctors have literally ordered them to not drink coffee. Like they had to reduce it to one. I think it was one a day.
I'm sure so many people have that, but there's no reason to stop in terms of like day-to-day life unless it gets extreme. Like I get headaches if I don't have a cup of tea in the morning, you know?
Yeah, that's ridiculous to me that we've got such a horrible view on drugs in our society, and yet so many people have got some kind of dependency on either coffee or alcohol.
Yeah.
Or nicotine. And two out of three of those is generally fine.
Yeah.
Wild. But yeah, taste can develop over your life. Obviously there are more complicated things in there, but basically, if something makes you feel good, it'll probably taste good to you.
Yeah, I believe that you also, I'm going off memory here, this may not be true, we can fact check it. I believe your ability to taste sourness goes away with age. Like you become less sensitive to sour tastes as you grow up. So that's why, or it might be bitter tastes. That's why you like, for example, you get more used, other than being pressured into it as well, you get more used to like drinking beer, for example. Like the first time you drink beer, you'll be like, why would anyone drink that?
Yeah.
And then as you grow up, you start being both accustomed to it, but also apparently your taste buds change.
So I did have a few studies. In fact, you can find the studies in the description. I found a few studies talking about how your tastes change as you age. And I think you can become less sensitive, I think, to taste in general as you age. And even things like, and because taste buds are cells that sort of renew quite quickly, I think that even something, some kind of therapies that, like, I think chemotherapy can take out your taste buds and make your taste change throughout that.
Wow.
Things like that. It's so many different things can affect taste that you don't necessarily think of.
Yeah.
It's strange. It can change as you age, which is why you like the taste of things.
Doesn't vodka kill your taste buds as well?
I don't think so.
Oh dear.
I don't think so.
Okay.
As in, okay. It could. I haven't read that. I haven't read that though.
I think vodka can kill a lot more than just your taste buds.
I mean, like,
it can kill you.
Like, hold on. Right. Put it this way. Vodka. Yeah, it can kill. It probably can kill your taste buds. It can kill a lot because it's alcohol.
It can't kill the taste buds directly, but it does affect the number. It numbs the texture receptors in the mouth.
Oh, it's an anesthetic.
Yeah, yeah, it's an anesthetic. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I mean, vodka could kill your taste buds if you removed them from your mouth and just sat them in vodka, probably. But
is that the vodka or is it the removing of them?
Yeah. 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 A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. So that's kind of a brief overview of taste and how taste can develop and why we like certain tastes and don't like other tastes. But you were talking about brushing your teeth, Guy. And I want to talk a little bit about that. So do you use the big circles, little circles? How do you do it? What's your style?
Oh, that's a great question.
I was joking. brushing your teeth. Have you ever brushed your teeth and then drank orange juice? That's a lie.
Literally every time we start recording, that's side guys, I go, you ready? And you go, just brushing my teeth.
We went for the same thing.
It's 5 o'clock. What are you?
I'm going. It's not good. That's it.
Have you ever brushed your teeth and drank orange juice? So you eat your blueberries, you brush your teeth, and then have you drank orange juice after that?
Yeah, and it tastes awful, doesn't it?
Yeah, it tastes awful. Do you guys know why that is?
No.
No?
Does the mint get rid of the sweet taste buds?
Kind of. You're on the right track there. So toothpastes have something called sodium lauryl sulfate. I'll just call it SLS for now. And SLS is basically kind of, it's one of the things that cleans your teeth. It helps clean. But
froths.
Yes.
Makes them frothy, doesn't it? It suds it up. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, you guys know a lot about SLS.
yeah.
So what it can do is it can suppress the sweet tastes of your taste buds. So it can suppress that, which means that when you drink something that should taste sweet, you can't really taste the sweet. And so because orange juice is made up of mostly sweet and bitter tastes, you get rid of the sweet, you're just tasting bitter. And you're like, this tastes awful. That taste the taste in the orange juice has always been there. It's always there. You just suddenly are more aware of it because it's not being overpowered by that sweetness that's usually there, which is really cool, I think. I didn't know this till I looked it up. And there's also sort of fats that help reduce bitter tastes by blocking sort of receptors that taste bitterness. And SLS can break those up as well.
Oh.
So that actually brings me quite comfortably on to our next element. If everyone can pull out their interactive parts for this episode, ooh, please.
Now, Corey, I've been looking at this the entire time we're doing this episode, and I think I figured out what it is.
Yes?
I think it's one of those pills that makes everything taste sweet.
No, well, yes, kind of.
Yes!
Yes! So this is...
I was not told about this.
Luke, have you got your... Have we all got our lemons as well?
I need to get my lemon. 1 second.
Okay, go grab your lemon, Luke.
Are you going to make us chomp into a lemon?
Yes.
Okay.
So this is from the miracle fruit. And I'll tell you more about it once we've you know, got into it. So
this is great. There was a whole like wave of YouTube challenges about this back in the day. So good. I've never done it though.
What I need for you guys to do is this is very pretty straightforward, but it's very easy to mess up. We're gonna have to sit here with these on our tongues until they dissolve.
Oh no!
You need to let them dissolve on your tongues.
There you go.
It doesn't taste much.
No. Do I need to chop my lemon?
Uh-huh. Chop your lemon.
Chop my lemon?
Okay. A lot like nothing. Well, this is going to be 5 minutes of great content.
So, nope. The thing is, apparently it doesn't taste for much. It's like cranberry, but less flavorful.
Yeah. Cranberry.
Uh-huh. Cranberry.
This is an extract from a fruit, is it not, Corey?
Yeah, it's an extract from... Phenethylum dulcifum.
I'm getting hints of cranberry.
Miracle fruit or miracle berry is a tropical fruit that temporarily changes the sense of taste and makes sour or bitter foods and drinks taste sweet.
Yeah, so
how about that?
Just sit and let it dissolve for a little bit and I'll keep on talking.
Okay.
It's a web berry that is native to West Africa and was first described in 1725.
I'm just thinking about the poor person who has to do the subtitles.
I was just thinking that.
A podcast.
I will send them a transcript. Okay, of this part. But, I'm okay. Sorry, my wolf. But it's very hard to talk without using your tongue.
I've said it was quite essential, if anything. Okay, I've cut my lemon in half. How long do you need to wait for this?
Just wait till it's dissolved a little bit on your tongue. Once you've got it like good and dissolved on there, it should be fine.
I think it's dissolved on my tongue.
Pretty much dissolved
on mine. Everyone else?
Yeah, it's dissolved on mine.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All good to go?
Yeah.
Let's see if this actually works. So 3, 2, 1. Oh, wow.
That tastes so good.
Oh, my
that
God.
That is so delicious.
Oh, wow. Mm.
I'm going to eat the whole lemon.
I'm going to get some more lemon.
I'm honestly going to eat it all.
It adds like a caramelly texture to it, doesn't it? Like a strange...
Yeah. Wow.
So I'm still getting... It's strange. I'm still getting like a tiny little bit of sour in some parts of my tongue.
I can still... sense the sourness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. But I think that's probably because you and I have taken half a tablet each, and we kind of rushed it. But wow, like, I'm really just tasting sweet here. It's so.
That's really strange. I'm trying to work out how to describe that.
It's kind of like, have you ever? It's like a lemon flavored sweet, where they put in a lot of sugar.
What else can we eat that we shouldn't?
I'm looking around my desk now.
So apparently it can actually make sweet foods taste sweeter.
Chocolate time!
So imagine if you're an American that's used to American chocolate, tasting English chocolate, and then taking one of these.
Thank you.
Do you know, this is the thing, right? looking at this lemon, my body is saying, do not bite this. It will be bad for you. And then...
Mm-hmm.
I lick it.
Both times I'm like, no, that's wrong. Mm.
My lips are covered in lemon juice and it's sore.
Oh no.
I'm so, do you know what? I'm to everyone watching, I genuinely recommend if you can afford to go and get one of these, some of these pills.
This is amazing. I didn't know these existed before you brought them in.
Fantastic. So there is this thing called flavor tripping and people will have parties where they get these tablets, they sprinkle it on their tongue and they start tasting things because What this does is it actually, it changes the taste of sour things and makes them taste sweet. And again, also some people say it can make sweet things taste sweeter. So it won't affect other tastes, but sour things will become sweet. So lemons and limes, you'll suddenly start tasting sweetness instead of that sour.
So good. Mm. That's really sugary, yeah.
Oh.
No, it's stinging my tongue.
Okay. And that's it gone. Wow, that last lemon was something.
I got too confident. Ah.
But that's actually a really good contrast between what lemons actually taste like, which is... like, and if you're watching this, you can see the difference in Jamp's reaction right now.
Yeah.
Compared to his reaction not 5 minutes ago, digging into those lemons. And yeah, so I thought that'd be a fun little thing for us to do this week. What do you guys think? What do you guys think of it?
That's brilliant.
I think it's not an experiment for cold sore sufferers, but apart from that, no. I think it was really... I think it's made it taste really delicious. Not the skin. The skin tastes like dirt, but the juice tastes great.
The skin will taste bitter, I think, because the skin has... that white bit of the skin is quite bitter. So when you're cooking, this is something that you may know from cooking. If you want lemon zest, you've got to make sure to only use the yellow bits, because once you get to the white bits, those start to taste bitter and bad.
Yeah.
All right.
And it's very difficult to make bitter things taste good. Coffee tastes bitter, which is, some beers can taste bitter as well. And those are tastes that are quite hard to get used to. So because this only changes the sour to the sweet, the skin still tastes exactly the same as it normally would. But yeah, what do you guys think of that? Is that something you might want to try again, potentially?
Oh, 100%. Actually, while eating it, I was like, I wonder where I can order these little tablet things so I can just eat lemons when I want.
And yeah, so how this works is in 1968, we isolated this protein from this red berry that is native to West Africa, as I said before when we were letting our tongues dissolve. So it's the miracle fruit is called Cinci palpum dulcificum, and it's a red berry. You get it from West Africa. It was first described in 1725. Basically, this French explorer, a Chevalier de Marche, saw villagers in West Africa eating the berry before drinking a sour wine, but then it was brought to the United States in the 1960s. And by 1968, scientists had found the protein that was responsible. And this protein has been called miraculin. Basically what it does...
Sounds like an ointment that someone would sell that solves everything in the like Victorian era. Miraculin!
Yeah, exactly. And it is quite miraculous, if I do say so myself. Basically what it does is it binds to those sour taste buds, the sort of taste buds on the tongue. And what it does is it changes that sort of sour receptor. Well, it doesn't change the sour receptor. It stops the sour tastes from activating the sour receptor and instead sort of starts signaling the sweet receptors. And the sweet receptors also then sort of suppress the sour tastes, if that makes sense. So basically what's happening here is it binds to the taste buds on your tongue. When you taste something sour, the sweet protein makes the sweet receptors fire instead and suppresses the sour tastes. And it's so odd. Basically, what this is doing is making you taste acids as sugars. Because as we said earlier, acids tend to be sour and sugars tend to be sweet. So what's happening here is literally acids don't taste acidic. They taste sugary, which is weird. It's so easy to trick your... We were saying this earlier, that you can sort of trick your brain by thinking, oh, I'm going to eat something sour. But it's so easy to trick your sort of your body physically to send different messages to your brain.
So a lemon's not actually that sugary, because I was eating it and I was like, ah, when all the sourness is gone, I can really taste how sugary this lemon is. But was that just the sourness?
Well, lemons and limes have sugar in them.
Yeah.
Definitely. They're quite full of it. But that was added sweetness as well.
Right.
So this sort of thing makes you taste sweet when there is sour.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the sweetness of the lemon plus the sourness of the lemon are just adding together to make super sweetness of the lemon.
Yeah.
So if we drank some like vinegar, would that taste like Coke?
It probably wouldn't taste like Coca-Cola.
Not exactly.
I think it would probably just taste sweet. In fact, it would probably taste more like, I guess a sweeter vinegar is a sort of balsamic vinegar, isn't it? Usually, does that tend to be sweeter?
Yeah, sort of sweeter, sherry, yeah. I'm talking about like apple cider vinegar. Horrible, but I drink it.
It probably tastes like an apple cider.
Whoa!
Business idea.
yeah. Although the one thing I'm not sure if you'd want to necessarily be drinking lots of different things, because it could potentially wash away that the stuff that's bound to your tongue. But it's a lot of fun, I think,
and upset your stomach.
So
maybe
much fun.
If you drank a load of vinegar.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. So you could just down some baking soda afterwards, and you'll probably be fine. Or you'll turn into a volcano. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, I really fancy some Mentos.
But yeah, that is the science of taste. What did you guys think? Anything you want to add, or anything
that
you want
to really
ask?
That was really interesting. Yeah. I did not see that coming.
My favorite episode of Vsauce that I got to edit was, what does human taste like?
Pig.
That was fun.
Human tastes like pork.
Apparently it tastes more like closer to veal. That's
Oh yeah.
Like a baby cow. Like that's what apparently human tastes the most like from a guy who actually stole bodies from the Sorbonne, and actually he didn't steal a body. He bribed an intern, and then he got given a chunk of human body to eat a bit of. And he actually wrote an account of what it tasted like.
That's interesting. Well, what kind of... That's so interesting, because you'd think that different cuts of human must taste different. You know,
I don't know which bit of the human. Maybe he didn't even know. Maybe he didn't want to know.
Because interestingly, I know a little bit about cannibalism. Don't ask why. Apparently that it human is called long pig in certain places. Because
my God.
Some people eat it and think it tastes like pork. If it tastes more like veal, maybe it tastes more like veal. But I don't know. I think that cannibalism is something that's quite interesting, because we've got a very deeply ingrained sort of this is bad thing to it in our culture. Yep. But as you guys will probably remember from one of our earlier episodes, there are some good reasons not to eat people. You can get quite ill from it.
Not eat their brains anyway.
Yeah. So eat everything but the brain, as we said last time.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we move on? Very
no,
quickly.
I want to keep talking about this.
No, we're moving on to the quickfire quiz.
They ate each other on TV, didn't they?
What?
That was crazy. Yeah, there were two. They basically took a bit of each other from like the leg or the ass or something, and they fried it up, and then on telly swapped and then ate it.
Who did this?
Whilst looking into each other's eyes.
What?
This is Ant and Dec.
I mean, I was assuming Ant and Dec.
It was Mel and Sue. Yeah. But because they didn't die, it was perfectly legal, and they consented, and it was all fine.
So it's now time for the quickfire quiz. No more cannibalism. It is time for the quickfire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun.
So the rules are, I will ask one question between all of you. I must finish asking the question before you can answer, and the first person to buzz in with the correct answer wins. What do they win?
Absolutely nothing.
Correct. So what are your buzzers? Jamp, what is your buzzer? Luke, what is your buzzer? Dear Lord, Luke. Guy, what is your buzzer? Very good.
Very good.
Strong.
Okay. Just
is that what your tongue does whenever...
It's the sour. He knows he's going to eat that. He's going to dive into that lemon as soon as we're done.
That crazy tongue.
So, my question for you is, can you name the five tastes that the tongue can detect? Ooh, that was close.
I feel
one.
Like with the delay, maybe.
With the delay, I think we'll go with Luke. Luke. What are the? Can you name the five tastes that the tongue can detect?
Sweet, sour, flipping heck!
What? Come on! Dave. We rattled these off like not an hour ago.
What? Sweet, sour.
I'm gonna have to pass it on to Jack. Can you do more than sweet
spicy.
And sour?
Sweet, sour, bitter, umami, and oh god, which one have I missed? Sweet, sour.
Exactly.
Bitter. Which one have I missed?
Right, throw it to Guy.
Sweet, sour, salty. Sweet, sour, salty. Sweet, sour, salty. Bitter, umami. Yes.
Well done, Jack. There you go. That is it. You've won this week's quickfire quiz. That's it for this week, Guy. How did you enjoy it? Did you
have a good time? I loved it. Hey, I want to get more of those and like finish the other half of the lemon. I don't know what to do with it now. Should I taste it now that it's gone away?
Yeah, give it a go.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, that tastes awful. I don't know what I was expecting.
So where can everyone find you, Guy? What are you doing? What do you want them to know about?
What do I want to know about? Well, I mean, I'm working on a couple of films. The problem with films is that you can't really talk about them until they're out, really.
That's true.
But I have I have an Instagram, as everyone does, and I run a production company called Penny Four. So we do lots of like internet filmy bits and pieces, but usually hanging about on Instagram, not doing much, procrastinating. Yeah.
You still selling those prints? Those bloody lovely prints you've got?
I do. Yeah. I do sell them.
Yeah, you definitely. Honestly, this is... No one has asked me to say this. Guy has not twisted my arm. Go and check out Guy's prints because they're very, very cool. Very
it's
nice.
Very kind of you. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
That's very good.
He's not ordered one, though, is he? He's not ordered one.
Well, actually, I was going to talk to you about that because I need... Yours are all landscape and I need portrait in my room. So,
oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I do have some portraits, but I've not made them into prints. Okay, that'll be round two. How about that?
Cool. All right. Well, I'll talk to you about that later. Anyway, so...
we'll just turn them 90 degrees. Doesn't matter.
So before we go, we would like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producer Ashley Miller. And also, thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday. And why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find a contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. You can find me at NotCory everywhere.
You can find me at Jampkin everywhere.
You can find me at Luke Cutforth everywhere.
You can find me hanging around the back of your house.
Give me the lemons.
Give me the lemons.
Just watch out for that tongue. Goodbye.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.